Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
I had a fisherman that taught me more in one sentence than I learned in a year of streamer fishing on my own. He had this horrible fly on. It wasn't this beautiful thing that was, you know, whatever. But he made the cast, and this fish blew up behind us on the other side of the boat. So he turns around, throws a fly over there, hangs the fish, proceeds to land this 26-inch brown. And he looks at me, and he said, "Man, that fish would have eaten a Snickers bar if I threw it over there."
That was Brian Weiss sharing some good advice of why your fly is not really critical. This coming from a streamer, fly tying YouTuber. This is the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today. We'll help you on your fly fishing journey with classic stories covering steelhead fishing, fly tying, and much more.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. If you get a chance, please subscribe and share this episode with one other person that needs some tips on streamers. Brian Wise is on to share some big tips on tying and fishing streamers. Brian has an amazing fly tying channel where he speeds up the learning curve for streamers. We find out how cake shaped one of his early videos, which sinking lines you need for getting down to the fish, and how to find the best habitat and the biggest fish. Stay tuned till the end of this one when Josh Clausen reads a poem about brook trout from the recent edition of the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. Before we get started, I wanted to take a moment to thank our sponsors. We've got a great new sponsor for the podcast with some very comfortable products. SoFly Gear, headed up by 17-year-old James Carlin of the U.S. Youth Fly Fishing Team, has a buttery soft, quick-drying line that I have been loving. Head over to SoFlyGear.com and support James and the podcast. The Fly Fishing and Tying Journal has an exceptional fall edition out right now. Head over to FTJAngler.com to support the great work Craig and the gang have created just for you. That's FTJAngler.com. So without further ado, here's Brian Wise from FlyFishingTheOzarks.com. How's it going, Brian?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on here. We're going to dig into a few things. You know, it's kind of interesting because we're going into, I break these things out into seasons, and we're kind of going into a dry fly season. But the cool thing is on my show, I'm pretty flexible, so I like to mix it up. And I always get great guests that come on that maybe aren't in line with the season. And I love to have them on because, you know, you are a big name, you know, especially in the streamer game. People love your videos. So we're going to talk about all the videos you have going. But can you start us off back to how you first got into fly fishing and then how you brought it to where you are today?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I love how you lead in with, you know, kind of getting into a dry fly time of year. And then I just come in with a big boom and we're just going to talk streamer.
Exactly.
But, I got into fly fishing. What most people would probably call late in life. I was not one of those people that grew up fly fishing. I don't have this big romantic story about how I picked up a fly rod at 5 years old.
Yeah.
That type of thing. I'm a late in life guy. I actually kind of grew up fishing a little bit, but I grew up more of an athlete. I was playing basketball and baseball every month of the year. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. And then I played competitive ball. And then I blew my knee out right before college. And things kind of went downhill from there with the sports.
Oh, wow.
So I had to find something to do. And that's when fishing started. I spin fished, which, you know, around where I am, there are lakes and rivers. There are so many lakes and rivers and different species that it's absolutely crazy. So I spin fished really hard for about a year, and then, actually got bored with it because it just seemed like the same thing over and over and over. And, enter fly fishing, and it just, took over from there. I was about, I was maybe 20 when I started fly fishing. So kind of an old man by then.
Exactly. You know, I've heard that number. It's, you know, we've heard tons of stories obviously here, and I've actually heard right around that range, the number of people that have, you know, they were doing whatever, and then right around 20 or somewhere in there, they kind of switched and it clicked and they went all in on it. And for you, so now where are you at now, and where were you when you first got into fly fishing?
Well, I'm pretty much in the same spot that I was whenever I started fly fishing. I'm in what would be probably called extreme southern Missouri. It's basically, I could almost throw a rock to the Arkansas state line.
Oh, wow.
But you know, one of the things around here is, you know, we're from Missouri. Those Arkansas people are totally, totally different.
Yeah. Right.
it's with the White River being, 30 miles away from me, I've got obviously a whole bunch of buddies that are from Arkansas. And, I throw that out there every chance I get.
Yeah.
I kind of extreme south central Missouri, very northern Arkansas. That's kind of my area.
Okay. Kind of
what would probably be called the northern part of the Ozarks.
Okay.
That's kind of where I am.
Gotcha. And so your home river would be, what do you consider your home river?
My home river is hands down the North Fork of the White River. You know, you kind of think of the White River as a chain, and we are on the upstream side of the lakes. So, like, the White River and the North Fork River in Arkansas are tailwaters. So this river is a freestone above the lake of that, and it's a totally, totally different beast. Like, it's known more for, like, wild rainbows. They haven't stocked rainbows since, like, the mid 60s or something like that. Extreme southern Missouri has a completely freestanding strain of rainbows that, you know, they haven't touched in years. It's kind of an anomaly. It's very, very cool. Very, very cool. But you know, it has big, huge brown trout in it too.
So. Yeah, it's got brown. And I wanted to get to the, I always like to hear the basketball story. We've had a few basketball guests, and basketball is my sport, and baseball, but especially basketball. And, what position were you playing?
I'm a little bitty dude. About 5'8".
Yep.
And so I was a guard. I was a total guard, but then in baseball, I was a catcher.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. And baseball was probably my better sport. But I blew my knee out in basketball, of course.
Yeah.
I was being scouted as a catcher.
No kidding.
And then you blow your knee out in basketball when they start asking for medical transcripts to see if you're going to play ball in college and you're a catcher that blew their knee out. It's kind of like, Yeah, we'll call you, don't call us.
Yeah, that's not good. It's already bad enough you're out behind the plate bending your knees all the time, right? That's pretty tough on the knees as a catcher.
Exactly.
Yeah, no kidding. So what did that, I mean, you take us to that moment. So, I mean, you're thinking probably like major leagues, stuff like that, right? I mean, you got big dreams and then you blow your knee out. I mean, take us to that moment. What's that feel like? How do you recover?
Right. You know, I always like to say that, you know, basketball was my better sport. There are two things I could do on a baseball was my better sport. There are two things I could do on a basketball court. I could run and I could jump. I had like this ridiculously freak show vertical.
Oh, wow. So could you dunk?
Yeah.
You could dunk at 5'8".
I was 5'8". I was like Spud Webb.
Wow. Just so you had like a 40, you had like a 40 inch vertical or something.
Yeah, I was north of 40. I was more like 44.
Damn.
I know. It was ridiculous. I was kind of that freak show that people, but I couldn't do anything else. There was...
Well, that's enough, man. I'll tell you what, if you're 5'8" and you're white and you're ducking, that's enough.
But it was, so when I blew my knee out, it basically what the deal was I could jump. I had too much power. And whenever I jumped once, it just literally, it just blew it apart. It was like, I'm really, really lucky to be able to do what I do now.
Yeah.
In all seriousness. So, you know, it was like I had immediate surgery, you know, yep. It wasn't like CL and right. stuff like that. And I had surgery that night.
Damn.
And then basically had reconstructive nerve surgery as a teenager.
Ooh.
And, was told, you know, you're never going to play ball again yep. and stuff like that. And, I actually came back and played everything. I missed 1 year. So,
oh, wow.
It's the only thing that helped me keep getting scouted was I came back so quick. But then, you know, I had verbal commitments and stuff like that. And literally they said, you know, we start off with a verbal, then we go to signing day and stuff like that. And, I visited these colleges and stuff like that, and everything was good to go. And I, as a teenager, I didn't even think, you know, yeah. oh, they're going to want to see my medical transcripts. And then, I'll never forget, head coach came in and talked to me, and he was like, "Hey, great, this is good." And then trainer came in and he was like, "Hey, all we need to do is get your medical transcripts and we're done." And oh, I was like, great, let's do this. And then, yeah, then I got a call.
Was that for baseball or basketball?
That was baseball.
And what college was that?
I had Missouri Southern, yeah. a little college called C of O, and SEMO, Southeast Missouri.
Okay, so, yeah, Missouri, because that's a big baseball. I mean, I know Missouri Southern, I think that's the name I've heard about, right? You get pretty good baseball down there. Yeah.
Yeah, good in the NAIA side of things. Now.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a great school then. It's a great school now. I ended up not going to any of the schools. I was just mad at them.
Yeah, totally. I can imagine.
But no, it turned out, you know, in all seriousness, if I didn't blow my knee out, I think there's a 0% chance that I'd be fly fishing right now.
No kidding.
Like zero. I don't see how in the world I would have ever gotten into it, because it was so far out of, you know, what it was so far out of my realm. Like, it wasn't even close. Like, the outdoors and stuff like that, the only part of the outdoors was, you know, when I was playing ball. And running. I was kind of a runner. It was just kind of like, I just didn't do that stuff. So, it everything happens for a reason. I'm a firm believer in it. And yeah.
Hmm. What was it about fly fishing when you first, you know, you spin fish for a year or so, you know, what, like in fly fishing, what triggered it? Why did you go so all in on, what was it? Is there one thing that sticks out to you? Because the YouTube channel we're going to talk about in a little bit, you've created a pretty amazing YouTube channel and gone all in there, but I'm curious to hear how, you know, what triggered it for you?
Well, you know, I would like to say, I don't want to get like all mushy and in my field. But you know, it really, I think the vast majority of it was, I got pretty solid at spin fishing, like really, really quickly. But then my mind kept thinking, okay, I can go catch fish anywhere with a spinning rod or gear and do just about anything I want to do. But there's got to be more to it than that.
Yeah.
Why is it so easy? And then I started fly fishing, and I had a buddy that whenever I was growing up, he was the only person I ever saw with a fly rod. Actually, we were on a creek just kind of swimming, and he brought a fly rod, and I was like, I remember being like, why are you just waving that thing around? Aren't you going to fish? I'll never forget it. But
yeah.
I mean, he was the only person I had even seen do it.
Wow.
But I knew it was something that was, I figured there was more to it, more involved in fly fishing than there was spin fishing. Like I know there are a lot of nuances with both,
yeah.
but, and I'll still stand firm on this. And, there's a lot more to learn in the on the fly fishing thing, side of things. And yeah. And I think that's what intrigued me the most about it. It wasn't easy. I had to have something that was just outside of reach, you know, that goal that was just outside of reach. And you know, in spin fishing, I found that goal really quick, and then
yeah.
I just kind of plateaued. Where fly fishing, gosh, I don't think I've plateaued on anything in fly fishing. So that was most of it.
You basically got bored. I mean, that was and I've heard that, you know, a number of times where people start spin fishing and then we've talked a lot about, you know, with steelhead fishing where you kind of nail it and it's like you're just catching a bunch of steelhead and then you're like, okay, what's the next harder thing? And you're kind of doing the same thing. That makes sense.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
So you dug in. We mentioned the YouTube channel. Let's just start off with the YouTube channel. How did you, you know, get the idea to start this channel? And can you just describe it to maybe somebody who hasn't seen it yet? Because it is pretty unique the way you do, you know, that you got the music mixed in and sometimes you don't talk and you have, you know, you fast forward through things. It's pretty sweet. So describe your channel to somebody new.
Okay. So I guide. So that's it. It all basically kind of started. YouTube was pretty new, like fairly new. It wasn't like a big, huge thing. Actually Vimeo was bigger than yeah. YouTube for people that took it serious back then. And but I wanted to market my little guiding business more. And it was like, this is 2005, maybe mm-hmm. somewhere around there. It was a little while back. And, you know, for professional video equipment, it was like crazy yeah. expensive, but then they started selling these little point and shoot cameras that were actually really solid, like for stills and stuff like that. So I got into photography, and I started off making slideshows, actually, of just like pictures and little tiny short clips here of really bad video, mm-hmm. And setting them to music and did that, and then the channel that everybody kind of knows now, really kind of kicked in when I was getting ready to do a musky fishing trip. Me and some buddies were going to go to Wisconsin and do some musky fishing. And I knew that we were going to do a video while we were gone because we had some capabilities there. And, so as like a teaser for it, I sat down and tied a big musky fly. And it took me like 30 minutes to tie.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is ridiculous. Nobody's going to watch a 30-minute video on somebody spinning thread around a hook.
Yeah. you
know? So what I did was I sped it all up. It was all one take. I do it totally different now, but it was all one take. I sped it up to where it was like maybe a 5-minute video, and I set it to cake.
Oh yeah,
the distance.
Nice. Right.
So it just kind of made sense, you know.
Yeah, back in the time when you didn't have to worry about royalties, right? You could just
exactly.
Yeah, is that still out there? Could you still find that?
It's still. I the music is gone because of certain things. Right. Well, because of. Once you hit a certain point on YouTube, like if you don't have any subscribers, there are no copyright issues. They'll say, hey, yeah, you can keep this copyright, but it doesn't matter because you don't have any subscribers.
Oh, how many do you need before you have to get locked down?
It's just like 1,000
yeah.
or something like that. Yeah. It's 1,000 or 5,000. It's something like that. But
yeah.
So after I hit that, they went through all my videos and said, okay, you got to fix this, so it's one of those that's still out there, but it's totally different music.
Gotcha. So if you watch, I'll find a link, I'll put a link in the show notes to it, but if you listen to it now, would it be not quite as good as the cake video or the cake?
Oh no, it was nowhere. It'll be nowhere near as good as the cake video.
Cause no
it was
kidding.
So good. It was, I know, but it, that song just did. It was just so perfect.
So how do you do it now? How do you do it now with, I mean, you got, you had that perfect cake. So now you, obviously you got these great, how do you find the right music? Do you still add music to your videos usually?
Yes. Yeah. All my videos have music. Very, very little talking. Like actually, if I talk, it's when I'm giving myself crap usually.
Yeah.
Like if I break my thread or if I, you know, just if I stab my finger with a hook point, you know, just something like that. It's just one of those things. And for some reason it's people love when I mess up. It's just like, and it's so easy to just cut that out, but instead of cutting it out, why not just give myself a little bit of crap and, and leave it in there and let other people give me crap too. So, which they love to do. It's great.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that is, it's interesting. I think about the music thing because it's, you know, I think that probably is a struggle for a lot of people that want to do something similar, but you know, where do you get this? So do you have a certain place? Do you have any recommendations on where people can find music? Are you making your own or what are you doing there?
Oh, I wish I could make my own. I have zero talent there. In a perfect world, in all seriousness, in a perfect world, those people that are doing that are the ones that are just on the level they need to be on.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. But I have like five or six sites, that I really look at. I think four of them are like a subscription based thing. So,
oh, gotcha.
Whenever you know what I mean, it kind of hits that point where
you have to
start buying.
Yeah, you just got to pay.
Yeah, you just have to do it. So it's at that point now, to where I have to do that and then go from there, because even like certain copyright free sites that are free sites, I'll still get dinged on a copyright claim every once in a while, or it'll be like a really good video and like 5 years later I'll get dinged on a copyright and it's like, ah.
Gotcha.
So yeah, because it's just like podcasts, you know. YouTube is there, you know. Yeah. So I still have you know, videos that came out say 8 years ago that are still getting, you know, several thousand views a month. It's there for good. It's like regular television. It's so much.
No, it's not going away.
No,
you kind of build on it. Well, I want to talk, you know, you mentioned the speeding it up, how you first, that was the video that really triggered what you do now. And I think you kind of speed through stuff that maybe is the stuff everybody knows and maybe is the boring stuff. Can you talk about, you know, as far as maybe some tips and, you know, if we talk about fly tying tips, and you tie a lot of streamers, but what's the stuff that you don't, I mean, is there stuff that you stop that you don't fast forward through, that stuff like somebody can actually learn? Talk about that. How could somebody, if they come on yours and they want to learn some tips on what you do, do you break it down and slow things down for people?
Yeah, there are some things that this may sound a little bad, but the whole reason I kind of started doing my style of videos. I say my style of videos. It's not really my style. The reason I started speeding up the videos was because I didn't want to. I hated listening to somebody tie a fly.
Yeah.
I found myself, you know, zipping through the parts where it was like, okay, everybody knows how to wind thread on a hook. I don't need, you know, I don't need to know that part. I already know how to, you know, stack a marabou tail. I already know how to do that. So I can just buzz through that, get to the next part. So I found myself doing that. But when I get to a very important part of the fly that I consider being very important, and typically it's like per fly. So like all these streamers and I hate to kind of bounce around, but, I've only done one video that's my actual fly.
Mm.
So, I've been lucky enough to, what I do is, I'm a wedding singer.
Yeah.
So I'm like a cover band for a streamer fly tires. Mm-hmm. So like you have Gallup and Rich Strolas and Mike Schmidt and Andreas Anderson, and we just this plethora of all these insanely talented fly designers. So what I do is I take their flies and do a video on their flies. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's how I do it. So, but every fly has something that makes it stand out or be a little different that I think is very important. So whenever I come to one of those steps, I might stop the video and say, okay, wait. This is when you need to pay attention, and I'll do it slow and I don't want to say I'll walk through it, because streamer tying, the type of streamer tying that I lean toward, which is the articulated slide, that big stuff, mm-hmm. it's usually not for somebody that's brand new to fly tying anyway. No. You know, so I kind of cater to those intermediate and advanced tires that have that stuff on the streamer tying videos. That's what I do. I did start a whole new series. Oh, it's been several months ago now. That kind of snuck up on me. Maybe about a year, but that is just tips.
Yeah.
I'll sit down and do, and it's actually, I talk through it.
Okay. So you have a whole, I'll put a link to that. So you have a video, like a playlist that's just fly tying tips.
Exactly. And it's,
gotcha.
And it's totally different. What I kind of realized was that, okay, there are some people that can learn something from this stuff. But I will never be one of those guys that's going to be, mundane, just, you know, kind of boring. Yeah. I'll never be that way. So I think I kind of have a cool way of teaching, that's gonna keep you interested. Like one of my, I did one very recently on rabbit strips.
Okay, a tips video.
Yeah, just rabbit strips. Just how to tie with rabbit strips. What to do with them, the different things. But I want to show you something that you maybe never seen before. You know, that's my whole goal. You know, even if somebody that's been tying for 20 years, mm-hmm. if I can show them one thing and show somebody that's brand new like three or four things, then that's a total win. That's a perfect video. So. Yeah. But then I need to entertain them a little bit too. So that's ultimate goal.
Yep.
You know, show beginners something or several things, show somebody that's been tying for a long time something, and then entertain them while I'm at it. And we win.
Yeah. You know, I've said this before, the three E's, you know, and this goes with podcasting and probably goes with YouTube or anything, but the entertain, educate, you said, and the other one is the emotion. And I think, you know, if you have at least two of those three, you probably have a successful, you know, podcast or video, right?
And, really well put.
And I'm sure you get a little of the emotion as well there. Hey, I would like to go on, you know, the rabbit strips and the tips you talked about. Maybe we can go down and break down some of those videos and just talk maybe a top 10 tips or maybe some of the videos you've gone through to talk about. Maybe if somebody wanted some streamer tips. I know fly tying is not an easy thing to do, but at least we can highlight it. Could we do something like that?
Sure. Yeah.
So also, yeah, how'd you break those down? How the videos, is there like a bunch of them, or are there just certain specific types? Do you go in on rabbit strips, or how are they focused?
The fly tying tips videos are not streamer specific. So my channel was kind of known as, oh, he's that streamer guy.
Yep.
But then I did this tying tips series. And I knew right off the bat that I didn't want to only do tips that would only help you on streamers. You know, I wanted to cover, typically what I wanted to do was cover materials. It's typically not like a technique or something like that. So I did like a deep dive on Marabou. I did a deep dive like on EP fibers, mm-hmm. just different things. I can't even remember all of them.
Yeah. So there's a bunch.
Yeah, there's a few. So what I would do is I'll break down like for little tiny tips, like on the Marabou, one of the biggest comments I got, or the most comments I got about the marabou tip video was, like, whenever you tie in marabou and you cut it off, like when you cut marabou, the biggest tip that I gave that people just went crazy over was you spin the stem really, really tight and then cut it. And it's this tiny little ball of marabou right on the hook that's left. Mm-hmm. You don't have this big, huge fluff of marabou.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's just that little stuff.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
And that's when I just kind of I decided to let it roll. Yeah. I've got a book that is kind of I call myself, it's kind of like my, you know how the Adam Sandler movie.
Oh,
the football player.
Oh, when he is the football player.
Yeah.
Oh shit. Yeah. What was that one called? Damn.
It'll be a good one, and we can work through this.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll get it.
The Water Boy.
Oh, okay. Water Boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I have this book that is kind of my playbook. I kind of call it like how Coach Klein on The Water Boy, on Adam Sandler's The Water Boy. It's my Coach Klein book, and I've got all this stuff. It's like I've got all this stuff written down, and this is as close as I had come to like having any kind of format in my videos at all.
Yeah.
So I have direction and stuff like that, and I'll go to Instagram and ask like my followers on Instagram, hey, I'm getting ready to do a such and such tips video. What would you like to see? And then, help have them be a part of it and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. It's a lot of fun. I haven't seen a lot of YouTube channels that that do like tips like that. Some of them are either very, very long or very, very short or, something like that. And I don't want to go too far. Like I did a deer hair video that was kind of long. I think it was 18 minutes, and I'm sitting there like, no, people are never going to watch this video. But they went crazy. Mm. So
yeah,
I just it totally, YouTube has totally changed from even just a couple years ago. That whenever everybody was shooting for that, that 4 minute video, that everybody wanted a 4 minute video. You go over 4 minutes and nobody watches. It's totally different, especially in COVID.
Oh, yeah,
exactly. Especially in COVID times.
Let's take it to the fishing, because you're guiding, which I didn't even really realize. So let's jump into that a little bit. And we're talking. You mentioned earlier the North Fork of the White River. Is that the main river you guide on?
Yes, that's my bread and butter.
That's your bread and butter. And maybe just take us to the river and talk about how you, when you have your clients out there, how you get them into fish and what's that look like?
Right on. Well, like I said earlier, the North Fork of the White is a freestone stream. It, everybody hears White River and they automatically think that Arkansas,
yeah,
big, huge tailwater, do. So, this is a totally different beast. Most of the time, if I were to fly you with a blindfold to a spot on the North Fork of the White River in extreme southern Missouri, you would swear that you were on the South Platte in Colorado.
Oh, wow.
It's just, it looks exactly like it, runs exactly like it, the fish are exactly the same. It's just, it's very, very cool. So, especially with like the YouTube stuff and everything that's kind of gone on and how I've kind of been directed in this streamer direction. I have a lot of people that just want to go throw streamers with me. And this river really, it's such a good river to learn how to really streamer fish, like for real streamer fish, because it's got everything. It's got big long holes that you can fish. It's got real quick stuff that you have to throw on the bank and strip off the bank, and so I get a lot of people that want to learn streamer fishing, and That's like my perfect day. If I gotcha. Can just describe my perfect day, give me somebody that can handle a rod, and we're talking eight weights and sinking lines here. Oh, you know, wow. we do not mess around. It's the real deal.
What sinking line? Maybe run through that real quick. What sinking lines are you using for a typical day out there?
Okay, so with streamer fishing, you're already kind of handicapping yourself.
Oh yeah,
you are.
Are you using? I mean, how big are these flies you're typically using out there?
From 6 to 8, 9 inches.
Oh wow, so somewhere. Gigantic. Yeah, so you're in the big. You're not in the little streamer game. This is the big streamer game.
Right. Yeah, we are basically every cast, you're looking for the biggest fish you like.
And so there's a couple things that come up. I mean, that right there, and I haven't done a ton of the big streamer game, you know, I've really ever done any of that gigantic stuff, but it just sounds like an amazing thing. Even if you don't catch fish, just trying to toss, I mean, literally trying to toss the thing out there. It sounds amazing. So yeah, take us to that. So I'm coming there. I can cast an 8 weight. I can throw this. I don't know if we're hucking, are we chucking and ducking and all that stuff? Or what's that like? How far are you casting?
Okay. So most of the time, if people aren't super familiar with like the articulated streamer game, that's the first thing they think of is, oh, you're throwing like an 8-inch fly. That's gotta be heavy. But yep. They are weightless. Most of them that we are fishing are called swim flies. There's no weight to them. The only weight is in the hook. That's it.
And that's because of, describe that. How do you make a humongous 8-inch fly weightless?
So when you start talking big flies, most of the stuff that we are going to throw, it's a pretty long cast. Like you're going to cast quite a ways at any given point, 30 to 60, 70 feet. If you can pull it, I'll let you throw 70 feet. But it's so different of a game than it was say 10 years ago where we're talking, you know, when you put a sink tip onto a floating line, and
yep.
It was this horrible,
exactly.
Horrible
thing. Not good.
So now we have integrated sink tips that are beautiful to cast. They're super easy. Everybody that does this looks at me and they're like, I thought this was going to be way hard. And yeah. It's not. So basically, you know, we have these 7-inch, 8-inch flies that are built out of bucktail for the most part. And bucktail, what it does is makes a big profile, but there's no weight to it. Like it's not going to soak up a whole bunch of water like rabbit or marabou or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it gives this big profile, but very little weight. You can throw them like a dart. They're really, really nice.
What's an example, a name of fly we can look at to see one of these?
A double deceiver. Just
double deceiver. Okay.
Just look up a double deceiver. That is, that's probably the go-to on, oh gosh, 70% of the time, some kind of double deceiver.
And who tied that? Whose pattern is that?
Mike Schmidt is probably known most for it. But it's in all seriousness, it's a lefty pattern.
Yeah. That's right. The deceiver decided.
Yep. Yeah. He did the deceiver. It's probably like a Great Lakes style fly. So, you know, those Michigan guys and stuff yeah. like that are the ones that really started to make it big and what it is now.
Yeah.
So, most people think of when you think of a double deceiver, it's probably that Mike Schmidt version of the double deceiver.
Yep.
And, it's just a beast. It's awesome. Such a good fly.
That's cool.
So, you know, we're throwing that on average, probably at least like a 30-foot head. So, the sinking portion of the line is 30 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can cast it short and still get it to sink, or you can still cast, you know, that whole 70 feet and still get all the sink you need for the whole retrieve. So there's nothing hard about this. There's nothing heavy. The line is maybe a little bit heavy to get used to.
What is the line? If you had to say, if I want to go buy one right now, what would be a company or a line if I wanted to get it? What you could use?
Well, I'm glad you asked because I didn't want to throw it out there myself.
Yeah.
I helped Cortland design their line of integrated streamer specific lines.
That's awesome. I was just talking to John and Brooks here this week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we were chatting. I'm gonna have Brooks come on here probably in a couple of months. So yeah, no, this is perfect timing. So yeah. So Cortland, and I love the Cortland story because, you know, just briefly I'll tell you, Mike, Cortland, I've been in fly fishing a long time, and I remember when I was a kid, Cortland was one of the companies that I used a lot, right? And
sure.
Yeah, and they were great, and they've been around forever, but they kind of took a little bit of seemed like they disappeared, but they're back, right? They got new ownership.
Yeah.
and they're kind of back, and they got people like yourself doing good things. So yeah, so take us from there. So Cortland has a good streamer line that you helped design.
Right. The way I look at streamer fishing is you have to cover all of your bases. Like I kind of started to allude to earlier, you're handicapping yourself whenever you try to do this, as far as, you know, how many numbers you're going to fish. You're not patterning fish, quote unquote. You know, most people can go to a river and figure out a way to catch fish.
What is patterning?
So like if you're patterning fish, if you go to the river and you've got if you got like the standard 9 foot 5 weight fly rod, you can go figure out a way to catch fish. Just, I mean, almost any time. I kind of feel like if you give me a 5 weight and put me on any river that has trout in it, I'm going to figure out a way to catch
fish. An Adams or an Elk Caddis or some whatever. Yeah.
Or swinging a wet fly.
You're
just something nymphing. You're going to be able to do it. But when you decide to go to the river and you are going to put your head down and do the streamer fishing the way you need to do it to see the results that everybody's looking for, that fish of a lifetime, you have to leave the 5 weight at home. Leave it. Yeah. Because everybody will want to use it as a crutch and try to start catching fish. Because, you know, we're not looking for numbers. We're not looking for numbers at all. I am really happy on a day where we moved two fish that are north of 22, 23 inches and didn't even get them to eat. But you watch someone on the bow of a drift boat that has never moved a fish like that. And it's very visual. Like the style of fishing we do, you see everything that happens to the fly. You're sitting there watching it swim back to the boat all the time. And anything that happens to that fly, you have a bird's eye view of it. And I've seen guys go pale and sit down when they saw a fish explode on it. Like I thought I was going to lose a guy once.
I thought,
and he was a young guy, but it was absolutely one of the craziest things I've ever seen in the whole fishing world. But, you know, that's what we're looking for. So, you know, if you're wanting to do this right, you have to give yourself the best chance that you can, because you're telling the fish how you're going to catch them, which is not typically the way the world works in fishing.
Yeah.
You know, typically we try to figure out the way the fish want to be caught. Whereas in streamer fishing, we're saying, no, we're going to throw this one big fly all day long and be happy if we don't catch anything.
Yeah.
So if you, when you go back into fly line, if you say, okay, I'm going to go to the river and the river's maybe a little bit higher than it normally is. So I have a fly line that needs to sink a little bit deeper now. So I have a totally different fly line for that day than I would maybe the next day that, you know, the river may have dropped out or something like that. So they have sink rates on these fly lines that I talked about the first 30 feet of line being the sinking portion of the line. So sometimes they've got one. They've got some that are just they're called intermediate lines, and they just kind of sink. You know, they just kind of break the surface. They don't float, but they just kind of break the surface and kind of get down. Then they'll go to like a T3, which will sink about 3 inches per second.
Yeah.
And then they have a T6 and a T9. So whenever I go to the river myself, I don't even do spools anymore. I just have three reels that are set up all the time. I have a T3, a T6, and a T9 all the time.
Gotcha.
I will always have those in my boat. So, you know, the little things that you can control, which in streamer fishing is not a lot. You know, there's not a lot you can control. But you know for a fact if you're just fishing a certain fly that's just not getting down enough, you know, it just doesn't seem like it's getting down, switch to a new line, and then okay, you're better. You feel like, you know, you feel like your odds are better that way.
And now a quick word from our sponsor. Here you go. FTJ Angler has a great fall edition that's out right now. You can find Lucas Stevens, who visits Winston Fly Rods, in the fall edition for an insider look at and a rare interview with writer Ted Leeson, someone I hope to have on the podcast soon. Patrick Wall pays homage to Harry Lemire's Tide in Hand Atlantic Salmon Flies displayed in the Margaree Salmon Museum. Boots Allen takes us to the pond with a masterclass in Stillwater. Dennis Dobble travels to Scotland in search of Atlantic salmon. Plus, FTJ Deputy Editor Henry Hughes with a mysterious fly fishing story, and Nora Etsy with her poem No Business, which I actually tried to read unsuccessfully a few podcasts ago. I'm not sure if you remember hearing that. So I'd love it if you could press pause right now, head over to ftjangler.com and subscribe so you get the next issue delivered right to your inbox. That's ftjangler.com. SoFlyGear.com, led by chief apparel guru and U.S. youth fly fishing all-star James Carlin, has a clothing line you're going to love. SoFly's mission to produce clothes that look good, perform well, can be worn on and off the water, and most importantly, are manufactured under rigorously sustainable methods. How do they do it? Bamboo, in a single word, a fabric that is buttery soft to the touch, durable, sun-resistant, and embossed with original designs and artwork. I've been wearing the SoFly hoodie on my last couple of steelhead trips, and it's been a game changer. Whether hot or cold, wet or dry, I've been feeling perfect in pretty much all conditions. I haven't taken this thing off. I mean, it's been pretty awesome. So totally support SoFly here. If you're ready to up your apparel game with this lifestyle fly fishing gear brand, head over to SoFlyGear.com. That's SoFlyGear.com to get started today. And like I said, I've been loving it. So pick up a hoodie and you'll be like me and you'll be good to go. Okay, back to the show. You're talking about the T3, T9, all that stuff. And that resonates a lot of the people probably listening now, because we have a lot of steelhead anglers on here who, you know all about the T and the sinking lines, but how deep are you getting that? So if you're, say you're making a 50-foot cast, I guess it sounds like you're spotting fish, or you know where these fish are holding. How deep are you getting it down? And maybe talk about that when you make that cast.
Okay. So whenever we start to target fish, we're actually targeting areas. It's completely blind. We have no clue. Typically, if you see a big brown trout, you're not gonna, and you make cast to it, you're not gonna hook that fish. It's just not gonna happen. We are trying to get the instincts, like the predator side of a brown trout. We're trying to get those instincts sparked. So think musky. I mean, basically, yeah. I've had so many people compare the type of fishing that we do to musky fishing. The only difference is we don't do a figure eight.
No.
Oh, but I tell you what, there are times when I've seen brown trout act so musky like that they'll come up to the side. And I row a 16-foot clacka, so it's not
okay.
You know, it's not like a little tiny boat that's floating down the river. I've seen brown trout that are north of 24 inches eat within oar length of my boat. I could have hit them with the oar. So they have a predator mindset. They really do. So what we're doing is we're casting to the areas that are prime for
predator brown trout to be able to ambush something. So, you know, ideally there's a drop off, there's a change in the bottom structure, or there is some structure. You know, there could be a lay down, a tree laying down, or, you know, a big clump of rocks, or, you know, just something like that. We're constantly scanning the bank for a change. Okay. Any kind of,
how do you find that when you're scanning the bank? How would you see a change in the bottom of the river? Is it clear enough you're seeing that, or are you just kind of guessing?
Sometimes it is, but one of the coolest things that I think that most people don't really think of whenever they go to a river is, however the bank that you can see is laying, typically that's the way it'll go into a river too. So if you have a flat bank,
that like is a sandy beach or something like that.
Exactly. Like, typically it's going to be a lazy kind of like a gravel bar. If you have a gravel bar, typically that's going to be boring water because it's going to be a gravel bar coming into the river. Whereas on the other side of the river, you may have like a sheer drop that is just like this bluff or something like that that's going into the river. It's going to typically do that as it goes down deeper into the river too.
Yeah.
So use your eyes, especially with a brand new river. If you've never been to a river, the bank you're actually looking at is a great, even if you can't see into the river, say the river's chocolate milk, the bank you're looking at will give you some kind of idea as to how it's going to lay as you get into the river.
Yep. That's a good tip.
That's one of the biggest tips I can tell anybody. It's because so many people go to a river that they've never fished before and haven't had time to learn it, you know, where all the drop offs are and you know, stuff like that. And if you can just read a bank, it tells you so much.
And that's why wood can be so cool, is that you see some large wood sticking out. You know there's scouring going around that. And, I mean, do you find that browns really love to be around wood structures, or is that not a critical piece?
You know, I think it kind of depends on the browns. If you go to Michigan, here, it's not so much. We don't have near as much of it. I think it's an opportunistic type of thing. If there is a drop off, like in my area, we are limestone. Like, we have long limestone rocks that are miles and miles long that just have gravel on them. So every once in a while you'll see, you know, limestone sticking out and that creates a drop off. And so any like drop off, any change in the river bottom, it seems so weird, and it is pretty generic to say that, but any change in the river bottom, even color, a change in color or density of rocks or something like that is going to change the structure of the bottom. Yeah. There's a reason there's a color change in the bottom.
Yep.
And it's not going to just magically change color with it being flat, you know?
Right.
So I look for color changes and stuff like that. So, so when we are making these casts, ideally we want to have this comfort zone with how deep we want to get the fly. And, you know, it's never perfect, and it can never be perfect because, you know, like when you're nymphing, if you're in a drift boat and you're nymphing, you never have the exact perfect depth. You can't. Yeah. It's impossible. But if you're waiting, you can kind of figure that out. Mm-hmm. You know, that if you're in one spot, you can kind of set your indicator to where, you know, you're ticking bottom the whole time and you're good to go. You just really can't do that streamer fishing because you have to keep moving. Because what we're doing is we're making one cast to the bank.
Okay.
And these fish are so predator driven that I don't even think we're trying to feed them. I've seen these fish do the craziest things, but it's not like they were trying to eat it. They're just trying to kill it. It's a kill thing. It's not a, oh, I'm going to eat that. It's a, no, I'm going to punch you right in your face.
That's cool. And so that's basically what you guys do. You're kind of working your way down. And are you anchoring up, or are you just kind of slowly drifting down and casting?
We never stop.
Oh, you don't. The only time gotcha.
Is when we're going to stop for lunch or stop.
Oh,
and
wow.
Have a
beer. So you, what if you, what if you're coming down and you make a cast and you see a fish, how do you, how do you make more casts of that fish?
9 times out of 10, the way it's going to work is if you move a fish, so basically, it's the coolest thing. It's the coolest part of streamer fishing is you get to see it. So what happens is you've been casting for the last 2 hours and you've watched this fly swim back to the boat for 2 hours, you know? Then all of a sudden you make a cast and all hell breaks loose. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking like fish commit suicide to kill this fly. Sometimes coming out of the water to kill this fly. It's that, you know, like I said, I keep going back to that predator instinct. If you haven't seen it, do whatever you can to at least see this happen in your lifetime, because it's the craziest thing. So if you get a big blow up on a bank, 9 times out of 10, that fish is done. If you don't hook that fish right then, you're done. Just keep moving. Every once in a while, they might do it. So sometimes if you have two people in a drift boat and the guy in the front gets a big blow up, I yell at the guy in the back of the boat.
Make it.
The guy in the back of the boat, get the fly in the water, move the fly through there. You know, something happened. Typically, it doesn't happen. You know, it's so you get two passes immediately. And yeah, it's gotcha. 9 times out of 10. That's it. Just keep moving.
Yep.
That fish blew up on it and expended a bunch of energy to do it, and they're done.
That's right. That's so, the energy. Okay. We're not going to get into the strip retreat. Like I noted, Kelly Gallup was on in a past episode. We talked about different retreats. I've had a few different streamer guests on. So, that was good. I love how you painted the picture there. Anything else we want to talk about? I guess the drift boat, I mean, it can somebody go out to that area and just walk and wade and kind of do the same thing, find some of those fish. Is that doable?
It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
We're talking like medium sized streams to very large streams.
Oh, okay. Yeah. These are big streams. Yep.
You know, sometimes you can, but we want water. That's kind of a big thing too. If it's, you know, like the White River, if they shut the water off out of the dam, we're not going to go throw streamers at
gotcha.
It because it's just not,
you need big
yeah,
water.
We need water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's harder. You can do it. So many people have private drift boats now though.
Yeah.
You know, people that do not guide have drift boats. They sell as many drift boats to people that do not guide as they do guides.
Yeah.
Now.
No, I know. And it's cool. I want to give a shout out to you mentioned Clackacraft. I'm actually doing a little mini series. I'm calling it on drift boats. I'm doing a little history of drift boats. I'm a drift boat fanatic. I'm going to be interviewing some of the founders from all the companies, hopefully including Clackacraft and some of the other companies. So yeah, stay tuned. I'll put a link in the show notes for that as well.
Nice. I can't wait for that. I'm looking forward to that.
It should be fun. I'm going to do a, oh, you know, the cool thing is the history. I think it's, I don't know. Well, that's the whole thing. I want to dig into exactly the history, because like the Mackenzie style boats and some of the prams, and then you had the whole, I'm not sure if you ever heard of Martin's boat. If you haven't heard of that, watch that YouTube video. I think it's called Martin's Boat, but it's Martin Linton. He's a guy, he's an old timer who passed away, but he was a guy who rode the Grand Canyon in a drift boat. Yeah, and they were specially made. But watch the first minute of that video on YouTube and you'll be like, holy crap, now that's some whitewater. But but yeah, I'm hoping to dig into that and hear how the whole history of how it all, you know, how we got to where we are, because now, I mean, you got Clacka, you got Hyde, I can think of a dozen drift boats that are all like amazing, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. And so I just want to give a shout out to that. But yeah, I mean, I think obviously, like you said, we could dig into fly design for, 2 hours here. But I'm trying to, you know, I guess the topics here, we talked a little bit about the fishing and, you know, maybe before we move on, is anything else just generally we want to hit on if somebody was going out there, if they say did have a drift boat, they wanted to follow some of your videos, tie some flies and just go try the streamer game on their home river. Any other things you want to throw out there?
Oh, yeah. This style of fishing will work anywhere. It's just, all you have to do is, it'll work for rainbows. It'll work for smallmouth.
Mm-hmm.
It'll work for largemouth. It's just you can size up or size down. You know, like, oh, in the Driftless, just like going to the exact opposite. Like, we have big rivers here, but if you go to the Driftless, like, they're small, but there are brown trout in there that are, you know, for their rivers, they're big brown trout. Yeah. And I've gone up there with like a 6 weight. It just sized my fly down a little bit and did the exact same thing I'm doing from a drift boat.
Yep.
Just keep moving. Just pound the bank and keep moving. And oh my gosh, I had a ball. So I mean, it's very doable on any river, especially rivers that have brown trout.
Gotcha. So pretty much any stream, you size it down. You know, you're using 6, 8, 9 inch flies, but you could size it down and, I guess, you know, size it down to whatever size you want to, you know, give a shot on your stream, and then do kind of what we're talking about. Cast, find those areas you think are good, cast in, and the strip, maybe just do a quick little on the retrieve. What do you think is the most common strip retrieve you do?
Yeah, it really depends on the fly. Yeah. I've actually had the conversation with Kelly about
that double deceiver. What if that was the pattern?
Okay. You know, I'm a guy that I don't want the rod tip to move. I rod tip either in the water or right at the water level and not moving because yeah, I know.
so no, yeah, that's your Kelly Gallup. So no jerk strip or whatever.
So the only issue is not everybody is Kelly Gallup. I've been lucky enough to fish with Kelly. I know Kelly well. He's a great guy. I'm lucky enough to consider him a buddy.
Yeah.
And I love to. I'd love to argue with him about it.
Yeah.
But not everybody's Kelly Gallup. You know, Kelly has this ability to move the rod tip and keep it where it needs to be.
Right.
Where I've seen a lot of people come into my boat. Exactly. And they'll, if they start the jerk strip, they'll move the rod tip, and then the rod tip is almost behind them by the time they're done.
I can see that.
And I'm yelling at them.
Yeah.
Stop. If you get an eat now, you're done. You know, so I'm a guy that I put the rod tip in the water.
Yeah.
Put the rod tip in the water. And sometimes if you're in a drift boat and you're in deep water, even with your sinking line, I'm 6 eyes deep in the water of the rod.
Oh, wow.
I have as much the rod tip as I can deep in the water.
No kidding.
Yeah.
9 foot rod?
Yeah. 9 times. Most of the time it's a 9 foot rod. So like if you're there, I'm a guy that's going to have a very sharp, quick strip. So, we always talk about a strip strike, you know, and we don't set the hook like a nymph fisherman or something like that, because that just, most of the time that just totally messes you up. So, what I do is if I'm going to use a strip strike, why not just strip like that every single time? So it animates the fly really well.
Hmm.
So what I tell most people is, you know, you're going to strip about 15 to 18 inches, very, very, very sharp, like sharp. At the end of the day, your rod, your casting hand is not going to be tired. Your stripping hand should be tired.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing. So short and real quick strips. So it moves the fly really well. You get a great head shake, great pause, you know, because it gives it momentum and then it dies. So once that momentum dies, the fly turns.
That's
beautiful.
Right. That's
so you have that short, quick strip. And then if you get an eat, it's just the same strip.
Huh.
So if you're doing it over and over and over, now it is, like I said, it's very visual. The eat is very visual. So it's, nobody knows what's going to happen and how everybody's going to react whenever you get an eat. But, you know, ideally you're just going to do that same strip and everything's over and you're fighting the fish. So that's where I tend to go. But, you know, you can change your cadence.
Sure.
That's the thing. You don't want to do that strip. It depends on the water you're in, depends on the structure that your fly is getting ready to swim to. You know, a lot of times not stripping is the best thing you can do when you make a cast, because if you start stripping, you're going to strip away from all the good stuff. So sometimes strip, 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 and wait, and you see like a big rock coming, and you know your fly because you can see your fly. You can see a rock coming. Let it swim to the rock, and then swim it around. Yeah, just you're constantly scanning, constantly looking. It all makes sense. It really does. I've never had somebody get in the boat and say, "This is totally opposite from anything I've ever done," because it's just fishy. You know, you're just thinking fishy.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's cool. Well, you know, like I said, we were not going to be able to cover it all. I wanted to bring us back to the YouTube channel as we kind of take it out of here. And it's funny because I've actually got Kelly coming back on here soon. We're gonna actually do a dry fly episode or something like that. We're not sure, but we kind of joked talking on email about all the. He said, we're going to talk about some of the porn names again, you know, because all are guys out there, are they still, because Kelly joked about that in the last one, are they still coming up with the crazy, is that still a thing, or what's the naming thing at now with the new streamers?
Yeah, I think it's slowed down a little bit because it's gotten pretty commercial.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? Even Kelly had to kind of pump the brakes on some of the names of his patterns. And they kind of shortened some of his names.
Oh, they did. They shortened them. I gotcha.
So it's a little commercial. So some of the companies, and actually, Kelly's flies are with a lot of his flies are with Montana Fly Company. And I just picked up with MFC.
Oh, cool.
So my first commercial pattern is going to come out in 2021.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm excited.
What's that one? Can you talk about it?
It's called the Knucklehead. It's, the way I kind of talk about fly patterns is if a new fly pattern doesn't fix a problem with another fly pattern or give it a different kind of swim that you're looking for, then it just becomes a novelty.
Yeah.
You know, it just... doesn't make any sense. So I kind of designed this fly to be a keel fly, and it'll keel like the hooks will always be up and down. Mm-hmm. It's not going to fall on its side. So it's got these foam, this kind of a foam head just on top, and they're little strips of foam. So it's like this gnarly looking foam stripped head that's kind of trimmed like a deer hair head. Mm-hmm. So I call it the Knucklehead. And, it's pretty cool, but, we're working out, we're actually just doing the fine tweaking now, and Montana Fly Company will have it. It'll be in fly shops in 2021.
That's cool. Cool.
Yeah.
And you're working for, and aren't you doing some stuff? I think you mentioned it when we were talking before on, is it the Flyman Fishing Company? Maybe you can talk about some of the other companies you're working with and you're doing stuff with.
Right. So since I started doing these videos, I've kind of gotten pretty good at putting a fly tying video together, and I can do it, get it knocked out, and have pretty good quality and stuff like that. So about a year ago, a little over a year ago, I was approached by Flyman Fishing Company to not totally take over their YouTube channel, but basically to do at least a single fly tying video per month. So, which is the style that I do my channel in too. So, it's a little different than my streamer channel. They let me kind of do my own thing with it, but, I do nymphs. I just did a mouse pattern. I've done like a flat wing and done some steelhead stuff and done some saltwater stuff. So it's, just covers the whole gamut. That Flyman's YouTube channel, we do everything, but I do speed some stuff up, but I do a lot more talking on their channel. So it's a little bit more maybe educational, with a little bit of even B-roll for product whenever I show a product and
sure,
stuff like that.
Recently I saw the Flyman the tester, right? Tester tank.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That was a Flyman. I watched that. That was so that's a new fly tank they have, right?
Oh yeah.
Which is pretty cool actually, which is like a great, you think you always see you hear a lot about the fly testers, but then it's like, okay, here it is. If you want to grab one, just go get your own. And what was that? Do you know the cost on that? I'm just curious.
149. Yeah. It's under 150. Yeah, just 150, under 150.
Just under 150. Yeah, so that's probably about right. Okay. And so you did a little bit of a like a promo, a little unboxing for them, right?
Yeah, I did a little unboxing. I have teenagers. So I had to have one of my teenagers be my stunt double because I had to run the camera. So I did this all this cool camera movement and stuff like this and still made it look like it was me that was unboxing.
Oh, right. Yeah, it was. That's so right. That's good.
He had to wear the shirt, but you know, I actually told him thank you in that video at some point.
Yeah,
but,
I saw that. Is the unboxing, when you do those unboxings, do you send people, is it kind of like you get an affiliate link to send people to, or you get a commission, or how does that work? Or is that just a promo you're doing for working with them?
It's actually, the whole unboxing thing kind of got started with the fly tying tips videos. I would randomly start getting stuff. I opened something at the beginning of the fly tying tip, a single fly tying tips gotcha. Video.
They just sent it to and you for free, yeah.
It was cool. So it was like this was actually like a fan. I say fan. I hate to.
Yeah.
Gosh, that seems so weird, you know. But they sent like a letter and then some stickers and then a fly to me. Oh, and cool. I was just like, oh, cool. I'll open this up while I'm on a tying tips video because I do some more talking and stuff like that. And then it just kind of went crazy. So I've got some stuff that I've got like a stack of stuff that I'm going to go through and like unbox and. I don't do anything like halfway. I'm never going to be that guy that just opens a box and that I'm done. This is it. This is what. So, yeah, I end up getting myself into stuff that I'm like, how did I get myself into this? Yeah. So, it's cool.
Yeah. So basically you just do, I mean, they gave you that. So you're just kind of doing to kind of promote their stuff and cool product. You're not going to open up a product that kind of sucks, right? It's going to be decent.
Exactly. That's always, you know, cause I've gotten stuff in the past that, and I've gotten offers for people to send stuff. And it was always with a caveat that, you know, we'd like you to make a video on this.
Yeah.
And I'll tell them, you know, I'll send it, but there's no, if I don't like it, I'm not going to do a video.
No,
because I don't do a video where I dog something. I'm not going to do that.
No,
that doesn't do anything good. And, you know, some people might like what they have. So if I had put a video out saying this thing is just crap,
yeah, you don't want to do
you know,
that.
I just
no,
don't
I know.
Like that. So,
I know.
So I have some stuff that, you know, I may or may not, you know, do a video on. I know I've got two or three things right now that I'm definitely going to do a video on. I've got an anchor right now that is so awesome.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Is that the new anchor that doesn't get caught up? It's
Well, it's the tornado.
Yeah, the tornado. Anchor. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. It is real. It is. Even if this is being a drift boat guy.
Yeah.
Yourself.
Oh, yeah.
If you get your hands on one of these things,
I'm gonna check it out. Our local fly shop was promoting one, and I'll definitely. I don't think I've ever had to cut an anchor off, but I've had it stuck pretty bad sometimes. Where it was, I thought I was gonna have to. What do you use? Just curious on the oars, your boat. What do you use for oars?
I'm a Sawyer guy.
Yeah, you're Sawyer, like wood or composite or
yeah. Yeah, I'm I'm on wood now, but I'll probably do like a hybrid next.
Yeah,
Sawyer
makes some. I can't remember that. I used to have some smokers, but they make one that's my friend has. It's like counterbalance, so literally there's no weight on them when they're just. I haven't used.
Yeah, I've got my eyes on those too. Yeah. That's I'm 100% sure. That my next pair will be like that hybrid Sawyer that's counterbalanced and
that's what I'm going. I'm going for that for me partially, but mainly because my daughters they're like 6 and 8 right now and they're just on the oars. So I want to get them something where they could actually row the boat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think if I get those, I think they'll be able to like fast track them to rowing me down the river sooner than later.
You know, I never even thought about that. It really would help. So they don't have to lift and have the extra weight of pushing down and lifting. And that makes sense. I mean, my boys didn't,
didn't get a chance to do that. I was on composite when they were little.
Me too. I still am. I know. I still. I've got a cataract, some oars, and they're fine for me. I actually like them. But yeah, the wood oar, man, there's something about that thing bending. You know, there's nothing like wood, and it bends in the water.
Right. Right.
And that's a cool thing I'm loving about the drift boat series. Again, you know, not talking a lot about drift boats here, but the wood boats, right, is a really cool thing too, because, I mean, when's the last time you saw a wood boat on your river?
Actually, it's kind of funny. I've got a buddy that built one, and it's a big, huge McKenzie style, like high side beast.
Wow.
Like it's not meant for around here at all.
Who's the company? Was it a kit project?
No, he made it himself.
Oh, wow. He just created it himself.
Right. It's great. He's since moved on from that boat. He'll always have it, of course.
Yeah.
But he's since moved on, and he went the exact opposite. He went to, we've got a company here that does river boats, the big River John boats, you know, those 20-foot long boats that are skinny.
Oh, yeah. So not drift boats.
No, but they started doing a skiff. They started building a skiff very recently, and it is phenomenal.
Really? How's a skiff different from a drift boat?
Technically, it's a drift boat, but it's not. It doesn't come to a point.
Oh, it's flat on both ends.
Right, or pretty flat pretty anyway. Flat. It's yeah, and they're kind of square stern and bow.
Gotcha.
But they've got rocker to them.
Oh, but they are. So you could run. You could run some rapids if you had to.
Yeah, right. So you just can't run like much because like I run a low pro. So I can go over like a standing wave, you know, and let that bow slap down into water and not even, you know, worry about it. These, if you do that too hard on these, they'll take water over the front of them. So
gotcha.
Yeah, they're a little different, but they're really, really nice. But we just don't have that much of that kind of water around here, so we don't really have to worry about it.
You don't worry about it.
We have to worry about wind.
So, oh, right, right. And there's the clack. The clack does good with the wind.
The skiffs do really good with the wind because there's just no footprint above the water. It's just short. You know, it's just they're really, really nice. But,
that's cool. Yeah. Cool. Right on. Well, we got sidetracked to get on the drift boats, but. Well, I guess we'll take it out of here, and let's just do the 222 to take us out of here. I mean, you mentioned some tips and flies and stuff, but if we had to narrow this down, again, maybe we'll just keep it on the streamer fishing. If you talk, you know, two tips you want to throw. Would you rather throw out two tips on streamer fishing or two fly tying tips?
Ooh.
What's easier? What do you think would be easier or what do you think would be the most value to leave somebody with that's listening?
Oh, that's a really good question. Probably on the fishing side of things.
Okay.
That would probably be the easiest way to do.
So let's take it. So like we said, we got everybody lined up. They got their court and line, they got their rod, they got their flies, and they're going out there and they're getting ready to make a cast. What sort of tips would you give them for the day, or a couple of tips?
In all seriousness, I think I know the best tip that I can give is even before you start to make a cast or anything for the day. It's typically your state of mind whenever you get to the river and your game plan and stuff like that. This is work. Streamer fishing it's work, no matter how you look at it. But put your head down and keep making casts. I've seen this happen on the first cast of the day. And I've seen it happen on the last cast of the day, where somebody caught the biggest fish of their life. So, and again, then it can happen anywhere in between. But if you sit there and watch the fly swim back and you start getting bored and you start stop paying attention and stuff like that, you're not going to fish the fly as effectively as you normally would. So, the biggest tip, hands down, that I can give people is keep making those casts. Keep your mind in the game. If it's switching the color of the fly just to make you feel better, to bring you back in, then that is the greatest thing you can do. Just keep yourself engaged and keep your head down and keep going. Just keep grinding.
Do you switch? Kelly mentions his, like, he switches between like five or seven colors. Are you switching every 5 minutes?
No, I'm exactly the opposite.
Okay.
Like I'm of the mind frame that like I said, we're not patterning these fish. We're in all seriousness, we're trying to piss these fish off. We're not trying to be nice to them and try to feed them nicely. We're trying to make them mad and get them, you know, going. So, it just takes one cast, and I've seen it happen on, you know, like the craziest time I had one fish. This actually may be like the best thing I can do right now. Okay. Let's do this. I had a fisherman that taught me more in one sentence than I learned, like in a year of streamer fishing on my own. He had this horrible fly on it. It wasn't this beautiful thing that was, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he made the cast, and this fish blew up behind us on the other side of the boat. So he turns around, throws a fly over there, hangs the fish, proceeds to land this 26-inch brown. And he looks at me, and he said, "Man, that fish would have eaten a Snickers bar if I threw it over
there." Yeah.
And it would have done something to a Snickers bar. I promise you. If a Snickers bar would have landed in the water, there would be teeth marks on a Snickers bar.
No kidding.
So you will never get me to believe that this is something that, you know, constantly switching flies and constantly doing that stuff is going to help you that much. We're not looking for numbers. We're looking for that one fish that's ready to eat whatever comes into its zone, you know?
Gotcha.
And I'm actually going to, I'm working on a video of this because we talked about earlier for flymen. I did like some saltwater stuff and stuff like this. I tied a pink squid fly. I'm going to take a pink squid fly fishing for brown trout just to prove that it doesn't matter.
There you go.
And I'm going to catch fish. So, yeah.
And are you going to video? Are you going to get that on video?
Oh, I'll definitely do a video
of
that.
Nice. All right. Cool. And so let's just keep going on this. So we got, so how about a couple flies? You got two flies you can take, two streamers. What are those two flies?
Oh, I'm going to go two swim flies. I'm going to definitely have the knucklehead. I know that's the painfully obvious one.
Yep.
But it's a smaller form factor. The colors are great, and I know it's going to swim exactly the way I want it to swim. But then I'm going to take a pattern that one of my buddies, his name's Steve Daly. He's a guy on the White River. He's a Tasmanian guy. He's got a funky accent. He designs great flies, that he calls, going back to these crazy names, he calls the Lap Dancer.
Yep.
yep. It's a head heavy fly, that is going to get down a little deeper, a little quicker. So I've got two different zones covered. I've got, you know, the swim fly zone covered where I'm going to get where I need to be, with the line. And then I've got a head heavy fly that is going to get down in those deeper zones where I really need to get super deep.
Perfect. Perfect. And what about a couple resources? Anything else? We talked about a few different people on here. Where would you send somebody if they wanted to go deeper into streamers, either fly tying or fishing?
Ooh.
I mean, I don't know if there's like, it could be book, magazine, resource, YouTube channel, anything you think of.
There are tons of YouTube channels.
Yeah, there are. What are the top, what you do is obviously, you know, pretty unique. What are the other top, what would be your, what are you watching when you're not watching your own on for streamers?
Oh, nice. If I'm going to sit down and watch YouTube tying videos or fishing videos or anything like that, One of my big go-tos is Gunnar Brammer.
Yeah, Gunnar. Yeah.
That dude, he has a really cool sense about how he designs flies, and how he fishes them too. He's a great guy. The Fly Fish Food guys are really great and still entertaining too.
Yeah.
I have to be entertained. But then you get over like to the European guys.
Oh, right.
I'm not going to be able to pronounce the name of YouTube channel. I know I'm not, but Andreas Anderson ties a bunch on their stuff and stuff like that. Those guys, those guys are on a different level when it comes to fly, especially fly colors, like color schemes on flies. They put together colors like I have never seen. It's just amazing. But then, in all seriousness, gear guys, watch some gear guys. Like, there's a guy that designs baits, like gear baits. His name's Marling. It's called Marling Baits. And he designs like some crazy stuff, and then he designs some other stuff, because we can learn a lot from gear guys, like so much from gear guys. So don't just get too much into like only fly, because you can learn like swim bait design and how you can get a fly to swim like that. If you can kind of put things together, pay attention to gear guys. Marling Baits is he's man, that guy's awesome. And I just watched him make a bass lure that was a block of wood, just to prove that you can catch a fish or anything. It was just a block of wood.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's entertaining too. I have to be entertained. If I'm not entertained,
exactly.
So
right on, Brian. Well, if anybody here wants to be entertained, they can head over to Fly Fishing the Ozarks, your YouTube channel, or go to your website and they can find you there.
Yep, that's it.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for coming on the chat. I think we covered a little bit of everything here and gave everybody a taste of what you do. So yeah, I'm sure they'll be connecting with you if somebody has a question or, you know, wants to dig in a little deeper. So appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom. So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes and all the links we covered, just go to wetflyswing.com/157. If you'd like to support the podcast and add a small contribution to help keep the lights on here, you can head over to wetflyswing.com/members and join the Wet Fly Swing Member Society. That would be amazing if you could check that out today. And now I'd like to take a moment and share a poem read by Josh Clausen. And this is coming from the current fall edition of the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So Josh, take it away.
For the Brook Trout by Greg Keeler. You live hard in the backwaters and eddies where your flesh turns like coal into diamond and you burn orange up the flare of your fins for your own reason. The tracks stunning your back into dark marble and where we would go in sleep if dream were water. Since it's not, we rely on you to show us the way east. When you find size in still waters, 4 pounds draped over a purist's hand, it leaves no choice. Plato was wrong. All of the West was wrong. This living shadow burns, has weight.
There you go. That poem was written by Greg Keeler and read by our own Josh Clausen. Thanks, Josh. Appreciate you taking the time to do that. You can find more of Greg Keeler's work in his book, Trash Fish, or get the fall edition of the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. That's ftjangler.com. We appreciate FTJ as a sponsor as well. You can also connect with Josh again at the Member Society, wetflyswing.com/members. You can actually try a free week over there. I believe we got that going. You can kick the tires and say hi to the community over there and see if there's some people, see where everybody's coming from. Too many amazing, great people and not enough time of the day. That seems to be the problem always. I'm happy you are here with me and still listening here at the end of this show. If you ever have questions, feedback, or anything, you can send me an email directly, dave@wetflyswing.com, or just send me a DM on social at wetflyswing, Facebook, where we're at. We're kind of, we're all over the place, so... let me know if we're missing anything, how it's going, and I would love to connect with you if we haven't yet. Wanted to thank you again today and look forward to catching you soon on the next episode. Maybe even seeing you on the river or online. Tim, I'm going to get on the river, buddy. Buddy, it's coming. Hopefully we made it happen. All right, out of here. See you guys.